Hey everyone, welcome back to The Drop. This is RJ. We're excited to be back. This week we have something pretty interesting, I think, to share with you. This is a conversation that I had with Brian Brinkman, the co-host of Beyond the Pond. We started talking throughout this summer's fish tour about sort of fish criticism and expectations and you know, all kinds of stuff, and it evolved into this conversation. So if you like fish and you can't get enough kind of fish conversation about the state of the music, the criticism, the fan base, the ranking, the expectations, what does fish owe you, are there, you know, really quarters in jams, are there sports metaphors that are appropriate, that sort of level of depth, if you're into all that, you're gonna really like this episode. If you think you've heard enough about fish from people like me and Brian, you might not like it as much, but I encourage you to check it out. And you know, obviously check out osirispod.com for lots of other content. There's a really cool episode from Dawn from Female Centrics this week. She interviewed Bella, Trey's daughter, and really cool that she got to talk to her. There's all kinds of new stuff coming out, of course, every day, so please check out osirispod.com and follow us on the social media platform of your choice. And if you like The Drop, give us a review on iTunes. That really helps. And we appreciate you all tuning in. I'm going to jump into this interview with me and Brian. Enjoy. All right. I'm here with my good friend, fellow Osiris podcast host, and all-around great American, Brian Brinkman. Hey, Brian.
RJ, how are you?
Good. I'm glad we're talking. We've been going back and forth on this topic for like months, well, years maybe, but more specifically the past like month or so. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the state of music commentary and specifically fish. And Brian, we were talking a lot during summer tour, and a lot of the themes I think that you and I kept going back and forth on are things that have come up a ton in fish sort of fan commentary over the years, but more specifically over the past couple of years, it feels like.
Yeah, I think, you know, two people who have obviously taken it upon ourselves to share our thoughts with the larger fish world about the band, their history, their evolution, you know, and the kind of ebbs and flows that goes into, both positive, negative, and a bit of both at times. I think we've definitely talked about where things stand in the larger community, what the kind of themes are that people are talking about, what works, what, you know, I don't know. I think it's really fascinating, how, as long as this band's been around, there's been this sort of commentary around them. And I think that that's always been a larger good thing. And I'm excited to chat with you about kind of your thoughts on it and where it is right now.
Cool. Yeah. And you know, I would say, I guess from the outset, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, Brian, but I think you and I don't, pretend to speak for all fans or all fan points of view. We just kind of like
totally
have had this conversation that I think represents the way a lot of people are thinking about, music sort of commentary at this point.
Yeah, I think a lot of this will come from personalized stances, but also, you know, just kind of larger observations.
Yeah. So we had, like I said, we went back and forth a lot, and hopefully everyone has listened to the Beyond the Pond recaps of summer tour. As we were doing our quick hits on the Helping Friendly podcast, Brian and Dave were doing Beyond the Pond, looking at several shows at a time. And so we've obviously all been thinking about this a lot, and mm-hmm. we have a few like sort of themes that we're going to talk about. Should we dive right in, Brian, and go to the first one?
Let's do it.
So the first thing is this idea of criticizing music versus accepting what happens. Are those like, I guess one question is, are those polar opposites? Like, can you do both? And, you know, is they both have like sort of a negative connotation, but do they have to have a negative connotation? So I guess that's where we'll start. I know that, what are your thoughts on off the top of your head on that, Brian?
Yeah, I think it kind of gets the root of the kind of conflict between what I absolutely love about fish. And I say conflict in the sense that I feel like the band themselves have, and this is just my view on it, I think that they've kind of set up a brilliant career by this sort of theme of surrendering to the flow. Whatever happens mm-hmm. is the right thing to have happened right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
While also making a very conscious effort to criticize themselves, to evolve, to push forward, to never be comfortable in one place at the same time, to play shows that change and that don't resemble each other really in, you know, set list, song, positioning, music ways over and over and over again on a show by show, tour by tour, year by year basis. And so these two ideas, they seep into the fan base in really interesting ways. You know, I'm sure you're this way. I've walked out of shows where I've been like, man, I didn't ask for any of those songs, and I didn't necessarily want any of those songs, but I absolutely loved that show. And mm-hmm. I've also walked out of shows where I'm like, man, they played everything that I could have wanted tonight, but I don't know, I just didn't feel it. And that whole idea with Phish is always what keeps me on my toes, always keeps me coming back. It's that sort of surprise in the unknown that allows me to both, you know, work towards accepting whatever it is the band's doing in this moment while also personally thinking, okay, what else could have happened? What was going on here? Did this work? Did this not work? And why?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you think that, like, so if you fall into like the camp, which I do sometimes,
sure.
where it's like, you know, they're going to do what they want. I'm going to enjoy it. And could A, there's nothing I can do about it. And B, like, that's what they want. When they do what they want to do in the moment, that's like what's supposed to be, you know, the thing that happens. That's sure. the way I look at it a lot. And sometimes I don't. But is that like, are fans doing themselves a disservice by not thinking more critically, I guess, about what's going on, what's being played, what could be played, how they're doing it, and like what could happen versus what does happen?
I want to tread lightly here because I, like, you and I interact about this band in very similar and very different ways, I think, from time mm-hmm. to time. And there's a lot of people that I interact with Phish about that see the band in ways that are completely different, from very binary, this is great, this is not great, this is the best, this is ranked here versus here, to mm-hmm. I don't care what happened, I just love the show, the band had, you know, such great energy. And I want everyone, you know, including myself, I want everyone to embrace the band the way that they see fit. And I think that that's one of the beauties of this whole community is, I have a close friend who I go to Phish shows with, who he and I never enjoy the same show. We'll walk out mm-hmm. of a show. If I'm like 10 feet off the ground, he's like, it was a little bit too jammy. If he's, you know, freaking out, you know, as high energy as possible, to me, it was too rock and roll or, you know, straightforward. So, you know, I think it's right for everyone to take the band on the way that they take it on. For me, you know, one of the original things that was so appealing to Phish when I first got into them, you know, it started with people passing me CDs, and then someone passed mm-hmm. me a tape, and I heard, you know, this energy in their show that I just had never really heard in any music before. And the fact that I could kind of collect things was really interesting to me. But what really hooked me in was when I started to realize the statistics, the, you know, like covering and reviewing and thinking about the band the way that I thought about baseball and basketball and my favorite sports was what locked me in. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that we're going to get to this, but like, I don't necessarily think that there's like winning and losing when it comes to Phish, but I think that the ability to kind of categorize where the band is, what they're doing, what they're intending to do is something I personally get out of them a ton. And I think that that leads me towards a more critical mindset, because the way that I consume the band, the way that I tend to love the band, has a lot to do with the same reasons that I will watch pretty much every single Chicago Cubs game, even though sometimes I'm miserable doing it.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Do you think? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I just think that, So, for example, there was the Alpine 3 show, and there were people that we know who are great fish fans and have a lot of perspective who were like, well, they can clearly do this whenever they want, which is sort of a different topic. So, you know, the people who were being critical were kind of right all along because we were expecting more, I guess, but also, holding them to a higher standard, which to me, like, that's just not how it works because they don't answer to us. I guess in the same way that, like, we should talk about the sports thing, but maybe if enough fans kind of, like, you know, fans can force things to happen on sports teams, but it takes a really long time and it has to be kind of a lot of effort, right? Like, a manager could get fired from a baseball team because everyone's pissed, but that would take a long time and a lot more than just like fans talking about on the internet. But like, I guess like we hold them to a standard that they're not responsible for. So like, what are we actually holding them to? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I just rewatched the It documentary, which I hadn't seen in probably 10 years. And the last time I watched it, I didn't necessarily like it. And it's grown on me a lot. I think it's aged a lot better than it appeared in the moment for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Trey and Fish kept talking about in that was this notion of how far their fans came for these shows, and that, you know, their last shows before that were in Southern New Jersey. And then everything I've ever heard from everyone who's gone to Limestone is you cross the border into Maine and you still have like 10 or 11 hours to drive, and they talk about this sense of expectation that they feel, maybe not overtly, but, you know, from just the simple fact that 100,000 people or so showed up to see them on an Air Force base in the middle of nowhere. And so I certainly think that, like, and I go back to Trey's comments from Bittersweet Motel, where he talks about, you know, if we play a bad show, fans will get online, they'll talk about why it's a bad show. Like, that's the relationship that they've built. I feel like Fish has driven these expectations to the sense that they could be like any other large touring band in America and come out and have a very set, structured show that hits at the high points whenever they want to hit at the high points. But they've chosen not to. And as a result of that, you know, they take these risks that when they work, they almost reaffirm for us that, yeah, see, we knew that you guys could do this. You just have to do it. But when they don't hit, or when they don't hit the way that we expect it to, they come off like that's where like the muddy middle ground becomes of disappointment or acceptance, or, you know, I think a lot about the night before that Alpine 3 show that I loved the second set from. And the whole time I was watching it, every jam they got into, in my mind, I kept saying, man, just keep pushing on this. This is a really great jam. I just want to hear this music for another 15 minutes. And then they go into another song and then they'd find that same type of space in it. And in the end, it ends up being one of my favorite sets of summer because it flows really well. It connects in a really unique way. I don't necessarily know if I would have accepted it or if I would enjoyed it as much if I didn't put as much into the band as I do, which leads me sometimes to not like certain things, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you feel about this idea of acceptance and criticism. Like, where does it stand for you?
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, and again, like, I just represent my own point of view, but, Jonathan and I have talked about this, and I think he, Jonathan from HF Pod and Broke Down Pod, I think he and I are similar on this in that, like, my point of view is like the band and any band, they're going to play the songs they want that they're feeling the days that they want. And sometimes it's going to be amazing. Sometimes it'll just be really good. And sometimes, like, maybe it's not great, but there's, like, you know, the number of variables. We talked about this on HF Pod with Tom in the episode that I think will come out before this conversation, that, like, you know, anything from, like, is one of them, like, in not a great mood to, like, how are they feeling physically? Did they have, like, does someone have, like, not enough to eat, or does someone, like, really have to take a piss during the second set during a jam, or, like, you know, to, and then there's weather and the stage and audio and lights and the crowd and weather and family. And, you know, there's like hundreds and hundreds of variables that
right.
I think are like, I think they try every day to like have an awesome show. And I think for one, in one way or another, like sometimes it doesn't work. And I guess that's how I view it, is like they go out every day trying to play an awesome show. And sometimes they hit the highest and sometimes they like end up in the middle. But I don't think it's super productive, I guess, to like think about why they didn't play or why they chose to play a song or why Trey didn't practice enough for Gaiuti or whatever, just because like there's nothing that's really going to change as a result.
Sure.
But I guess that gets into like, you could think about it as art, like, you know, people criticize, you know, works of art from thousands of years ago that, you know, obviously we're not influencing the artist, but that's like, it's part of maybe adding to the conversation.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
And I can see that you could make that argument for music. Like, you know, the more we kind of analyze and break it down and offer commentary, the more that adds to like just the broader conversation about the music. But I don't know. I don't find it like very useful personally to like, to analyze it in that way. I think it's more like disappointment of expectations that gets me. Mm-hmm. And that's usually in person when I'm like expecting something specific to happen, which is always a recipe for disappointment.
That's absolutely true. And I think that's the constant challenge as someone who I think just inherently I am a critical person. And, you know, I find like I don't have any false impressions that anything anyone says negatively or critically about the band would ever or should ever influence the way the band does anything. Like, I don't think that Fish would benefit in any way whatsoever from, you know, anything besides taking fan ideas for things like what song should we bust out tonight if the band is feeling that, or like, hey, you know, we haven't jammed such and such song. Like, would the band like that? Like, I love things like that. And that sort of fan interaction, like, I think immediately of Drew Hitz. Thank you. His discussion with Trey about Mike's song, like, that was such a cool moment of fan band interaction where like Trey clearly had no idea that the entire fan base had been clamoring for a Mike song jam for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And was like, oh shit, this could actually raise the stakes of how we're playing on this, you know, great tour so far. Like, I love stuff like that. And I think that when the band chooses to kind of see how the fan base is reacting or what they would like, it always works out in a great way. And it's fan service, but it's fan service in a way that has always reflected what the band has been about, which is this very small community. So like, I don't fool myself into thinking if anyone says anything critically about the band, it should or would impact them in any way whatsoever. And I think, you know, it's been very enlightening to get to know Tom over the last couple of years and hear his perspective, where he doesn't remember set lists. He doesn't remember specific jams. He doesn't remember specific dates the way that so many of us obsess over the band think about. Like, to him, that's his best friend up on stage, and he just loves the fact that he can go and hang out and watch his best friend and his other buddies perform at this very high level. And that, to me, is like a reflection, I would imagine, of how the band feels about their performances. But I don't know. Yeah. I guess I'm the type of person that can like fluctuate back and forth between, damn, I just loved that just because, which is probably part of the reason that I love Backwards Down the Number Line, while also being like, man, I wonder what that selection there was for. Like, you had this great thing going and then this song came in, and, you know, for me personally, it's not something I'll go back and re-listen to. You know, that happens countless times throughout their overall live catalog. But I don't know, that's just kind of how I always go back and forth with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it sort of gets into the next question that we were kind of like, what does Fish owe you? And I think it's related, because I actually do think there's a lot of fans out there who feel like the band owes them something. Yeah. Owes them and not personally, obviously, but like we're like, you know, we deserve a great show, or we deserve a great second set, or we deserve like a big jam, or a not, you know, one song encore or something. And I went through a period of time in the late 90s where like I was really, I had a lot of expectations.
Sure.
And every show I went to, I was like expecting something. And I think it actually led to me having a lot of shows where I didn't have as good of a time as I would have otherwise if I just went in and, you know, surrendered to the flow sort of thing. But I think there is this segment of the fan base that feels like the band, the Alpine Valley 3 thing sort of is related. Like they can do this if they want to, and they should, because either because we pay them money or because we've been around for a long time or because we know they can or something.
Sure.
And I've just like worked myself out of expecting things. It still happens sometimes, but more or less I've like just allowed myself to just enjoy it, and I've had better experiences, but I haven't really felt, I just go and have a good time and then I leave and I'm like, that was fun, you know? So I don't know, like, do you fall into that camp at all, or do you understand that perspective of like the band kind of owes us a certain level of playing or a certain or anything?
Well, before I answer that, I want to ask you, because that's really interesting. You know, you talk about that happening in the late 90s, which is obviously a time period. And another thing I gleaned from the It documentary, Trey talks so openly about Big Cypress. And it's something that we really haven't heard from him in a ton of interviews of late. And it feels like for the first time in almost 20 years, the band is almost like freed from that was held over them. I'm curious, you know, your kind of battle with expectations. Do you think that was the music the band was playing? Do you think that was age, that you've kind of grown out of that and gotten to a point in life where, you know, you've seen shit and now you're just like, this is what I get to do 6 nights a year, whatever it may be, and it's going to just be the most joyful thing I've ever experienced? Or
yeah.
Do you think it's, you know, the way the band was playing then versus now?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it was, I remember this happening a lot in like the summer of 97, which is just like a strange time now to look back.
Okay, I can't understand that at all.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I remember the first night of, or maybe the second night of Deer Creek 97, one of those two nights, I went to both nights. One of them I thought was great, and one of them I didn't think was very good. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I just remember being sort of disappointed, but I think it's because like whatever I thought should happen didn't happen, you know, and I wasn't able to just like be in the moment. Yeah. And this might make some people like mad, but I chalk it up to like immaturity.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that anyone who has expectations is not mature, but that for me, that was like, yeah, I saw some more stuff. And also like coming back after 3.0, I mean, it's interesting also that some segments of like the Fish fans are a little bit more like, I'm just like, man, I can't believe we still get to see these guys play concerts. You know, like that's kind of the way I feel every time I go to a show. And then there's another group of fans. It's like, yeah, it's cool we get to see concerts, but they're not going to ever be as good as they once were. But I'm like hoping that they do. And I just don't think that like is a setup for success.
Sure. Well, and I appreciate you saying that. I think that there's definitely, there's a way to almost like train yourself to accept what they're doing, regardless if it's, and I think it's a testament to the band. If they're playing music that challenges you, there's one way to, you know, accept that in a way that, I don't know if it's maturity or if it's, you know, just kind of like working with your own mind to rid yourself of expectations. I think it's really hard to do. And I think that's why, there are a lot of people, myself included at times, that, simply can't do it. You know, to one of your earlier points, just in terms of like, does the fan, or your earlier question, does the band owe us something? I don't think they owe us anything beyond what they give us. Which may sound contradictory to the way that like I consume the music and I communicate about it. But like at the end of the day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about like the Trey drug court speech. That is still one of my favorite things I've ever heard from him. And I remember watching it in the months after they came back in 2009 and just like feeling this overwhelming sense of gratitude that we just still have this person in our lives and we have this new version of this person that, you know, over the last 10 years, we've watched really grow as a songwriter and really grow as a person and as a band leader and as a bandmate, you know, and letting his friends take the lead in different ways. And we've seen this like creativity from the larger band that, if we were having this conversation in July 2009, I don't think either one of us are speaking as definitively about the accomplishments that the band was about to, you know, have over the next 10 years. So I don't think that they owe us anything. I think they've given us more than we could have ever asked for diehard music fans. You know, I do think when it comes to expectations, it's such a weird thing because I was thinking a lot back to like the shows that I've seen because it's hard. It's harder to, like if I listen to a show on Couch Tour, or if I watch a show that's webcasted or I re-listen back to it, I'll be the first to admit that like my perspective on it's going to ultimately be skewed. You know, I've gone to a lot of shows. I went to one a year ago tonight, July 28th, 2018, that had quite frankly, like one of the worst, if not the worst set list I've ever seen in my entire life. Just like every song I was like, I don't want to hear this right now. And yet the band delivered with really fantastic performances of songs I never necessarily wanted to hear. And that was a really weird kind of learning experience as a fan to hear the band play songs I'm not asking for, that I'm not looking to hear, that actually delivered in really profound and powerful ways. I think conversely, a month later, you know, Curveball gets canceled and their next shows are Dicks. And I remember having a really hard time going to that first night of Dicks without having expectations. You know, my thought was they just had their festival canceled, like completely just unprepared moment for the band in their history. Like how do they, like this sort of stuff just doesn't happen to Phish. They've been so fortunate to not have to deal with this sort of stuff. How are they going to respond to this? And but at the same time, I was like, man, this is like the first moment since 2004 that's almost given us a sense of like, we may lose this band. Like what happens if we don't actually get this band? And so I went into it just like, I had the hardest time just dealing with that as a normal show. And it turned out to be one of my favorite shows I've ever seen the band play. So like, you know, I think that there are moments where you can go into the show and you think that's going to happen, or you have a really hard time kind of tampering, emotionally. And again, I'm just speaking for myself here, how the band is going to play, and they come out and they deliver. And other times they come out and they play something that's completely contrary to what you would quote want to hear. And if you kind of follow what the band has been teaching, it ends up being a really good moment. But again, that's hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, and I mean, you know, this maybe we should have said at the beginning, or maybe it goes without saying.
Sure.
This is like all completely personal experience. And, you know.
Sure.
Like, and everyone experiences music in a different way. Do you think that, criticizing or analyzing in the way that you do on your podcast and we do on ours, you know, with good and bad and, you know, whatever, you know, constructive and non-constructive criticism, do you think it's better for either the band or the music? Like, do you think it's healthy overall? And do you think it like helps move things forward in a good way?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to do. And I think it's really hard to do right. And I think, like we've certainly had moments, on Beyond the Pond where we've been, hypercritical or kind of reactionary. And I don't necessarily think that that benefits the larger commentary or criticism. But I also think I think that discussing the band is, like, I wasn't there, obviously, in the 90s. And my impression of Phish criticism has always come out of the mindset of someone who got into the band when everybody told me that they were broken up. Even the first hiatus, people were saying, they're probably not going to get back together. And I remember that was like my mindset of like, well, this is just a band that's kind of locked in time. So like my perspective on talking about them has always been as someone who just wants to see one more show, just wants the chance to see one more show, which in some cases makes me a very, like someone who's very susceptible to just acceptance of whatever they do. Cause I'm just grateful for the moments that, mm-hmm, I get to see them, which I think in part has perhaps made me kind of battle that internally and be more critical because I don't want to just like accept it for what it is. I don't know. But I think the fact that the discussion is there shows passion and shows meaning behind what the band does, that they're not just getting up on stage and playing a show. I mean, I've seen so many concerts where, you know, I'll have a conversation with whoever I went to about it in the car ride home, and they never really discuss it again other than like, oh, that was a fun night. And Fish is really different in that way. I mean, there are shows I didn't attend and never would have had a chance to attend that I've gotten into hour-long conversations with people about, both good and bad, that have been really meaningful. And I think as the band has developed over the last 10 years and digital communication and access to the shows has increased dramatically, it's led to a larger increase in these discussions. And in that, you're going to see, you know, I would only encourage honesty from people in this. I don't think that people should just fall in line if they didn't necessarily like something. So I think, you know, it's really important for people, you know, to try to discuss and describe what their experiences, what their thoughts are on this, knowing that they're going to reach disagreements with people about that. And that's okay, because everyone's approaching this in a very different way. I don't want to keep rambling there, but does that all make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I think my, like, I don't know, I think my takeaway from this like discussion so far is just that, I don't know, I guess my thought is like the band goes out. Well, I don't know. Okay, let me put it this way. I assume that Fish, like most bands, go out almost every night trying to deliver as much joy and fun as possible. And like, there's so many things that affect that on and off the stage. And that's just like, that's my perspective. And that's why I kind of try to be like a little bit less critical of what happened, it still happens, you know, like Camden Night 2, when I was, you know, like halfway through the second set and they played Rift, and I'm like, why? Like, that just doesn't make sense. but obviously it made sense to Trey, right?
Right.
So good for him. Like he thought it made sense. I didn't. And like if I, you know, if he wants to talk about that, like I would talk to him about it and tell him that I don't think it was a good decision. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, you know, for the most part, I just kind of assume that they're going out there trying to earn the money that we're all paying them and have a great time. But Brian, let me ask you a question. You guys, I think on Beyond the Pond do this almost like self, it's a little bit like comical the way you guys relate sports and music.
Sure.
And I think you do it to like, to a point of like kind of making fun of yourselves about it. I think this summer you were talking about Fish, you know, being in contention for the wild card and playing a rubber match, which I didn't, you know, which I get, I totally get, but it was just funny. And I think like people on the internet have gone all in this summer on like criticizing or supporting this idea of like sports metaphors for music. I know you, because like I said, I think you guys do it to like sort of make fun of yourselves and us when you guys get into the baseball comparisons, but are there really quarters in Fish concerts?
I think it's funny because I can't even take credit for the notion of quarters. I don't recall the first time I ever heard it. I remember hearing it and being like, oh, that kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know,
especially because of the finish, like the finish of the show.
Yeah.
You could call it the second part of the second set, I guess. Right. But it seems like shorthand that a lot of people understand, but it also like gives this,
I mean, there's a clear, like there's a clear falling action to every second set. I feel like anytime I hear one, there's a clear moment where either the band looked at the clock or they just instinctively know we've played for an hour or whatever, we need to start wrapping things up. And there's always, like, you know, a very distinct decision that's made there. If you listen back, like I once did an entire re-listen of Spring 92, 93, 94, and 95, because I wanted to hear that development during those four tours. And so I listened to every single show on their anniversary. And there was such a clear, marked change in 1994, where 92 and 93, their shows were so structured. And if you got a Tweezer, you didn't get a Mike's. And if you got a Yem, you didn't get a Harry Hood. And those types of songs were always played in very specific parts of the show. And there was like a clear structuring that the band was doing while kind of playing around with, well, how loose can we get? Where can we go with this? And then in 1994, a lot of that just started to go out the window. Are there quarters? No. I mean, like the band doesn't come out for like 45 minutes and then go backstage and then come out again, obviously. But yeah. I feel like... in my consumption of the band and how I hear it, you know, there's like a clear moment in set one where we've stopped introducing you to the larger themes of the show. And, you know, a lot of times that comes with like a Reba. Like we've played like three or four songs to kick the show off. There's a lot of energy. Let's take a quick break. Okay, we're going to play Reba. Everyone's going to settle in. We're still here for another, you know, 2.5 hours. Everybody just relax and we'll see where this all goes. And that kind of then transitions into, you know, the band working towards set break and how do we build the energy up for set break. And second set, you know, a lot of times they come out, they start jamming. And if the jams are working, that kind of leads them into more jams. And perhaps you get like a flow, like a Gorge Night 3 from 2018, July 22nd, that... You know, there's that show, that set to me, just like there's almost like a breakdown of when does the set start, when does it end, because it's almost as though the band is just going through this song works right here, this song fits right here. Sometimes, and I'll just call it out, the first night of SPAC there, the second part of the second set, they had gotten into such a great flow. And to my ears, Trey just kind of started throwing songs out there. Son of a Mule. I think Haley's Comet was there. There was something else that was in there. I think it was Fuck Your Face and then Harry Hood. And there might've been something else to close out. To me, it just felt like they had played, and this is my perspective, obviously. They had introduced the show or the second set really well through a lot of great improvisation. And then either had lost track of time and realized like, oh my God, we've got like 25 minutes left. We've got to wrap up this second set, or just wanted to throw a bunch of songs out there for fans to hear on the tour at this point in time, songs that hadn't been played yet. And so just kind of threw them out in succession. That was how it sounded to me. And that to me, like, I'll be honest, I haven't gone back and re-listened to that entire second set because I haven't felt a good desire to. That felt like a set that was kind of split apart of, here's your Down with Disease, your Sense and Subtle Sounds, your Wilson, or your Twist, and then Wilson. All of this flows really well. The band's playing with a ton of intentionality, and then here's just a bunch of songs. Now, there is very likely someone sitting out there who's listening to this telling me to screw myself. And they're probably right, you know, because they probably were sitting there like, holy crap, I've never seen Son of a Mule. I've never seen Fuck Your Face. This is amazing. Like, I realized in the moment as I was being critical, it was like the 16th Fuck Your Face ever played. And it was the first time they played it in a second set since the Fuck Your Face show. Like, what a weird, bizarre time for all these people to get their first version of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
But it also came in a moment where I was like, to my ears, to my impression of what I want from the band, and this gets back to what we're talking about from an expectation standpoint, it was not what I'm hoping for or looking for on a show-by-show basis. And I've certainly seen those kind of shows. And... have walked out being like, yeah, I didn't necessarily love that, but I still had a great time because I was at Fish. I guess at the end of the day, I don't know how to, and I think this speaks for everyone. I don't know how to interpret music I love any other way than I do. And I think that's why there's always the varying opinions on this sort of stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think like that show's a good example because I was there and
sure.
So I experienced that and I guess to me, like I also, like I said about Camden night two, also like playing Rift in the middle of the second set is like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, but that's fine. I think the SPAC night two is like after the Down with Disease and Sense, which I guess was a total of, I don't know, 40 minutes or so. That was just like, it was like, whatever, do whatever you want, you know? And I think this ending with The Hood, which is one of my, you know, my favorite song to hear live and
yeah, man.
A good version, was, yeah, it's interesting because it does seem like what you said at the beginning of this was like, this part, was like, there's a wind down, you know? And I think that's probably what most people are referring to with like the fourth quarter thing. And I think sometimes it seems more intentional, like, okay, what are we going to do to close it out? And then sometimes it just feels like, you know, they're just playing whatever they want to play. Like that SPAC night too, from where I was sitting, at least it looked like they were just like, Trey was just having a blast, yeah. You know, like playing Wilson is like fun, I guess. And playing Son of a Mule is fun. And like playing both of those in the middle of a second set seems weird, but I guess he was having fun with it. And yeah, it's interesting. I like the thinking about it as like the way things wind down, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And how they're going to wind those things down.
Yeah, because I don't think there's like a winner or a loser in any of this. Like, I think,
yeah.
I think that, and I think this goes to a point you were making earlier of, you know, in your perspective, they come out and they want to play the best show possible for paying customers and whatnot. I almost slightly disagree with that. And I'll explain mm-hmm. it in the sense that this summer tour, I thought was pretty challenging. Like they introduced 20 plus songs that either had been played once or twice before or had never been played by the band before and came from a very personal and complex side project created by Trey. And mm-hmm. that's really hard to do. And it's really hard to do and have your fan base come along with you. And I think that mm-hmm. that is part of why I love the larger discussion and larger criticism around Phish is they're like purposely doing that to us. They're not mm-hmm. coming out and saying, all right, you're going to get a 35-minute tweezer every single night because we know that's what you want. And every single person at every single show is going to get a bust out that they've never seen before. And, mm-hmm. oh, we're going to peak the show with a really rocking jam that's going to segue into a tweezer reprise because we know you all love that. And then we're going to play Harry Hood to close things out because we know that that's yeah. going to make you leave with like really emotional feelings about, oh, I have to come back. Like they don't do that. They like that second night of SPAC, that second night of Alpine, Mohegan night one, the second set, like those aren't on their surface really like, they're not like fun Phish shows. I don't know a better way to like put it. Like I love those shows. Like mm-hmm. can't like Mohegan night one, set two is one of my favorite sets of the whole summer. And yet they're playing in very low tempos and very mm-hmm. mellow ways. And they're playing new songs.
Yeah, it was really mellow.
Yeah. And like the big song from that night was the same as, Camden night two, Beneath a Sea of Stars.
Yeah.
Like what a risk to say, none of you have really ever heard this. It's very slow. It's late in the second set. We're going to try something here. If it goes the way that we hope it goes, if that's how they're thinking, you're all going to love this. If it doesn't, man, we might fall flat on our faces. And that like mm-hmm. risk is one of the most intriguing things about Phish. And I think that they have to consciously know, at least in my perspective, that they're going to go out and they're going to play these shows that are going to be risks that may work and everybody loves it or doesn't work and people chatter about it. And I think that kind of relationship is fascinating to me.
Yeah. I think the one thing about the quarters that I wanted to mention before is like, I think it discounts the rest of the show because then it's like this particular thing was good or bad as opposed to like, they actually played an entire show and this was sure. one part of it. So I think that's like what we should keep in mind in terms of the way we break these things down, even sets, you know, like the first set was very first setty. I've heard people say, and like, yeah, I mean, that's like, that's technically how it works, you know, but that also, it just like, it kind of, you should look at these as like full pieces of music because they are, but,
well, I want to ask you something about that because I think that that's really interesting. and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but what is your, actually I do. What is your favorite fish show of all time? Like that you've either attended or just like listened to, like what is your go-to? If you are banished to a desert island, you have only one show to bring, you're bringing it. You can't say Cyprus. Man. That's cheating.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I wouldn't say Cyprus. Man, I would probably. I would say you know Dayton 97
okay.
would be at the top. New Year's 95 would be at the top. Those are the two that come to mind offhand. I would also say the Fuck Your Face show from 2012 would be up there.
So it's interesting. Dayton 97 has like an amazing first set that's so out of character for what people, you know, typically think of as first sets. A lot of people I've heard criticize that second set. And so it's interesting the way you perceive this and that being perhaps your favorite show. I mean, obviously 1231-95 is like the perfect encapsulation of everything fish, but like,
yeah,
I think that this gets to it in a sense, in some small sense, like my favorite fish show of all time is December 30th, 97. And that part of what I love about that show, and I think it probably affects or imprints its way on how I perceive shows going forward, is the fact that they went Harry Hood, I think Gaiuti, Sleeping Monkey, and then a four-song encore. Like that, to me, when I listen back to it, it's a complete show. I put it on, and I'm listening to every note from start one to the end. And that's not to say that you're not doing that with Dayton at all, and that you don't have, you know, I know you have very legitimate reasons, and that's a really great show. It's interesting to me, though, that, like, I don't know, like, do you find that, like, the first set of that show outweighs the second set and any criticism ushered about the second set, like, completely outweighs it, like, because the first set is just so good, or, like, what's kind of your thought on it?
Yeah, and I also feel the same way about, two other shows that I listen to a lot, 11/17/97, which the first set is one of my favorite sets, and I don't listen to the second set as much, just because, like, the Johnny B. Good stuff, it's sort of like the Wipeout. It's like those kind of shows kind of, I don't know, for some reason I like, it takes away when they're like doing some of the kind of teases and fun stuff. Although it's fun at the time, listening back is not as interesting to me. So like that show to me is the first set completely outweighs it. And then like if you go to, you know, Providence 94, same thing, you know, like, that 35-40 minutes, I'd still put the whole show up against anything, even though, like, you know, I mean, the first set is fine, but there's not a lot there. So I still look at it though as like a show, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Not as a set. But I think your point is a good one, which is like we do focus in on the parts of shows that we particularly appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I don't think there's any right or wrong. I think, you know, it's interesting that, I think that there are definitely some shows, like Providence 94 is a really great example of this. There's really great playing throughout it. For me, if I go back and listen to that show, the number one thing I'm going back for is the Bowie. And that Bowie is so remarkable from a musical standpoint, from a length standpoint, you know, basically, you know, where they were at in their career at that point in time, that it kind of can overshadow any other aspects of the show that I may not necessarily find personally necessary to listen to. And sometimes I love listening to those shows because I love to hear how a big jam impacted the rest of the playing. I almost think about it in the sense, did you go to the Albany 2009 shows, the shows with like the huge set below?
So
I don't know how you felt coming out of it. Like I loved night one and I streamed these from Korea in the morning. So I was not in the venue, but night one to me was like a very complete package. Night two to me, I go back and I listen to Seven Below and Ghost and I don't listen to really anything else. I kind of think about it in the same way as like Jam Filled versus Powder Night. I go back and I listen to the big jams from Jam Filled. If I listen to Powder Night, I'm listening to the whole show. And I don't know, like do you hop around to highlights? Do you, I feel like this is like, yeah, perhaps maybe like a difference between the two of us. I don't,
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more of a full show person,
okay,
for the most,
okay,
part.
Okay.
But I don't, I mean, not always, but often. And that's interesting, the difference between those two nights of Albany. 'Cause I think that second night, yeah, I mean, it was so awesome,
sure,
to be there. 'Cause I felt like it was like their back, you know?
Yeah.
But I have listened to the full show a lot of times, even though the first set is like, you know, fairly standard. To me, it's like listening to those, listen to the first set of, you know, Providence 94 or that show you just mentioned, the second night of Albany. It's like all part of the context, you know. You gotta listen to it all to appreciate what happens. But yeah, maybe that's just a different way of listening, you know.
I mean, I think it, and you know, there's no right or wrong way to do any of this. I think this is like part of what I love about Phish, and it's why I've always drawn a parallel between what Phish does and my love for baseball, in the sense, mm-hmm, that I've gone to so many baseball games where like the team that I dearly love has lost and disappointed me. And, you know, there's like legitimate wins and losses in that,
yeah,
setting,
yeah,
that is not in Phish. Like, I want to be clear, like when Dave and I talk about like, is Phish in playoff contention, it's very tongue in cheek, just,
it's
a fun,
yeah, exactly,
way for us to analyze the tour and be like, hey, are we doing like, how is everything kind of coming together? But one thing I love about the two is you have these very specific structures. Phish is going to come out and they're going to play two sets of music and an encore. Some nights they're going to play three sets, and rare in times they're going to have a secret set. But you know what you're getting into. You've bought your ticket. You're going there. You're going to hear, I don't know, somewhere between 8 to 13 songs over the course of 90 minutes. In the first set, most of the time it's going to be them going through kind of rotational songs. Sometimes you get a bust out. Hey, maybe you get a jam. Very cool. A lot of energy, a lot of fun. Everyone's having a good time. Come out for the second set. You know that they're most likely going to take some more challenges, yada, yada, yada. I don't have to explain this. Same,
yeah,
thing with baseball. 90 innings, you get offense, defense, blah, blah, blah. What happens within those structures, like those structures are so brilliantly simple, because what happens within them, every time I've ever gone to a Phish show, just like every time I've ever gone to a baseball game, I've seen, mm-hmm, things that are completely different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen things happen that I never had seen before. And sometimes you go to a baseball game and you see 26 outs from a pitcher that's almost a perfect game, and then the perfect game is broken up in the last out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sure, the pitcher lost this super rare thing that they were working towards, and everybody in the stands technically lost this experience that they could have remembered for the rest of their lives, but they also still had, and this is to your point, those 26 outs.
Really awesome game. Yeah,
yeah, really awesome, yeah, experience. And like, I think about that with Phish a lot of the time, that like, there are shows I'll go to and they will do things I didn't necessarily expect nor necessarily want, but I still walked out seeing things I never had seen before musically from them, and all of that is like totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if in my mind there are certain shows or certain moments that like I'm definitely going to elevate above others just from a personal standpoint to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, well, Brian, we could talk about this forever, but we have been going on for a long time. So what's like, I guess, wrapping up the conversation, what's like a takeaway from, you know, we've been thinking about this and talking about this for a while. Do you have any like single takeaway from the conversation and what you've been thinking about?
I mean, I think it's really cool to learn how you perceive all of this, because obviously like the two of us have taken it upon ourselves to talk about our opinions in this arena, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody really asked us to do this.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't know if they, you know,
some people have asked me to stop.
Yeah. I've been asked to stop a couple of times. So I think it's really fascinating for me to like always talk to you about, you know, 'cause I think we come from that shared sense. I think from like a larger standpoint, my biggest takeaway in these sorts of conversations and in talking just about this band is I want to hear diverse thoughts and opinions on the band till the end of time. Like, I love that there's any given day where I have three or four different text message chains with different people talking about the same band, but different aspects about it. And then I can throw on Twitter and there's different people in different threads talking about this band. And I think the fact that we all keep coming back to this band, but we all hear this band and consume this band and communicate about this band in different ways reflective of our own personal experiences is just completely fascinating to me. And I think it's a testament to this really weird ideas that just kept piling up on each other from the band when they were young.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the, you know, we could like, I think you and I probably represent some people, you know, but there's millions of different perspectives. And I agree. It's cool for me to understand your perspective based on your personality and love of sports and way of thinking about music, which is totally different than mine. And I think it's, maybe we can leave people with the idea that like, think about it, not as right or wrong, but as, you know, lots of different perspectives. And that's something, you know, we didn't even get into kind of whether shows can be good or bad or whatever, but, you know, think about the fact that your worst show might be someone's best show. And that's based on tons of different factors. Not that someone's bad at music.
I would totally agree with that.
So maybe we can like, maybe if we can open a few people's eyes from this conversation to like, just remember that the people who, you know, whose opinions you don't share, like they have their own experiences to draw from and different backgrounds and the way they think about it. So, you know, that's I don't know. I think that's a good place to end. What do you think, Brian?
I think we've accomplished something, or at least we've just talked for an hour, which is good as well.
It's good as well. People who are listening, if you have thoughts and like, you know, let's keep the conversation going.
Totally.
Brian, maybe we can do this again and like pick it up. Cause I actually, the one thing we didn't talk about, but I think we should save for the next time and people tell us if you think we should talk about this is jam length.
Yes.
Cause it's like a whole psychological thing and a musical thing and a fan. I mean, it's fascinating, but
that and
there's probably other things.
That and I think the idea we touched upon this, but at a later date, I'd love to talk about this idea of can the band just do this and they're not. I think that that's a really fascinating subject to get into, and I think we should definitely do this again. This was a lot of fun, man.
Cool. All right. Well, so this is Brian Brinkman. If you have not heard Beyond the Pond, you will, after this conversation, realize that you should have been listening because Brian is very smart and has awesome perspective. So thanks, Brian, for talking about this.
Thank you for having me, RJ. This was a ton of fun. And if you don't know RJB and you don't know the Helping Friendly podcast, I don't know really where you've been in this larger community, but please tune in. They do a fantastic job deep diving into like the fans' perspectives as well as the history of this really great band. They do it in a really unique way, and I love it. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Brian. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to that conversation with me and Brian. I hope you enjoyed it. Send us your thoughts and feedback. What's your take on this whole, you know, topic that we were talking about sort of the state of Phish commentary and criticism? What are we doing? What do we do differently? What should we think about? What do we miss? What do we get right? What do we get wrong? Tell us on social media or via email. Everyone knows how to get a hold of us, but thanks so much for tuning in. Again, if you haven't yet, leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. Appreciate you all tuning in. We'll see you next week.